Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. My very special guest today is Dr. James Veltmeyer. He is the chief of the Department of Family Medicine at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, and he's been named the top medical doctor in San Diego, not just once, but three times in 2012, 2014, and 2016, and that's according to his own colleagues in the San Diego Medical Society. That's quite an honor. We are here today to talk about two things: his own personal struggle with a very difficult situation that he's been dealing with within the healthcare system, and then secondly, to discuss his ideas for reforming our healthcare system that's actually very different than what we've heard out of either political party. So, Dr. Veltmeyer, thank you very much for joining us and taking the time to come on our show today.
Thank you very much for having me here and allow me to share my story.
Dr. Veltmeyer, can you start by sharing with our listeners a little bit about your background?
I'm a child of four children. I was born actually in South America, third world country, Guayaquil. And I really need to share the story that when I was a year old, my father abandoned our family, so we became very poor. When I was 9 years old, I was actually living on the streets with my two brothers, my sister, and my mom, so we were homeless.
Wow. So you know what it's like to be poor and at the other end of the spectrum.
I was extremely fortunate that I had an aunt that lived here in El Cajon that worked very hard for 2 years to get me to America. Mm-hmm. After six rejections in 2 years, I was able finally to come here for a better tomorrow. My mom came here 8 years after, so her legal process was 10 years. Mm-hmm. My aunt who raised me, who actually just recently passed away on May 1st this year, she did not know how to read or write. And I can proudly say that I am the chief. I've been elected chief of the medicine department at Sharp Grossmont Hospital for the last 5 years.
Very good. So you really are a true American success story, an immigrant who was able to pull yourself up by the bootstraps, so to speak, and
that's it, my own sweat, my own determination.
Congratulations.
And I've been blessed. And I've been blessed that, you know, I came to America, the land of opportunity,
right,
the land of dreams. So I worked very hard and accomplish, you know, what I've accomplished. It's because this is the only country on the planet that gives you that opportunity.
Yes.
If you work hard with education. In 2015, July 2015, my wife got diagnosed with breast cancer.
Terrible.
And just so you know, we do have the highest premium, the highest PPO that money can buy.
Yeah, so you have what would be considered sort of a gold-plated insurance plan. You obviously can afford that as a physician. And yet, I think it's really a statement about our situation with healthcare in America, that even a top physician with the best healthcare that money can buy,
and I have resources that most Americans do not have.
That when your wife was diagnosed with this terrible illness, breast cancer, you found that certain critical things were not covered. So tell us about that.
Basic health insurance coverage, was not rendered or, you know, given to my wife.
So we're talking about diagnostic testing.
Yes. So I diagnosed my wife with a breast mass. I brought her here at Sharp Grossmont Hospital. Mm-hmm. I took it straight to my colleague, an oncologist, and we walked directly to the radiology, and we requested it breast mass ultrasound-guided biopsy, because that's what we needed.
Right.
We were stopped by the insurance company, and they wanted us to get a chest x-ray, which we refused. So then they wanted us, my wife, to have a mammogram. And we explained to the insurance company and said, look, my wife just had a mammogram 7 months ago, and it was normal.
Yeah.
And they told us pretty much, if you want the biopsy, you need to get the mammogram. So we agreed to get the mammogram. We waited for 4 hours for pre-authorization for an imaging study that they forced us to take.
What did it show?
Nothing.
Gee.
Normal, just like it was seven months ago. So we waited, and I think an additional 2-3 hours to get the lung biopsy that we had requested from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Same day, once we got the biopsy, we walked to the pathology department, and we got a preliminary report that it was cancer, malignant cells. Now, Think about this. What I did in one day is sort of like parting the Red Sea.
Yeah.
It would take the average American months to get this done.
And even after all of that, even with, frankly, the privilege and the access that you as a doctor had, this still was not enough. Then what happened?
So the oncologist ordered a PET scan to stage her cancer.
And explain, for those who may not know, what is a PET scan and why is that a superior test?
Okay, so let me just give you what the MRI, CT scan, chest x-ray, and so forth, what that really is. It's a two-dimensional gray and white imaging study.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for that to detect cancer, you have to have an anatomically a tumor large enough where you'll be able to kind of say, okay, that's not look like a part of the liver or adrenal gland and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that you can have small tumors that may be behind a organ, tissue, bone, and you're going to miss it.
So a PET scan will show that?
PET scan, if you've never seen what the heart looks like or the lungs or the liver on any imaging study, but I would just say, Miriam, look at the PET scan. Anything that highlights red, aside from the heart, it's cancer.
Okay. So you asked for the PET scan, her oncologist.
The expert asked for the PET scan, and it was denied. And my wife was forced to have an MRI of the brain, bone scan, and a CT scan of the chest, CT scan of the abdomen, CT scan of the pelvis.
So all this extra radiation and cost for all these other tests, and
it didn't serve her well. Right, she from the very beginning, she was not properly staged. So she underwent her chemo cycle, every 3 weeks, six times. And guess what the oncologist, the expert, recommended? A PET scan for surveillance.
Yeah.
Pharmaceutical company, when they research and develop medication, for cancer treatment, to cure cancer, exclusively they use PET scan, 100%. Not so MRI, not CT scan, x-ray, nothing.
So they know this is the most effective. It's
exactly,
the gold standard.
Exactly. But so she was denied again.
Wow.
Just to give you a quick summary now.
So how much time had gone by?
She's gone through three chemo cycles, one radiation cycle. She underwent bilateral radical mastectomies. And her PET scan for surveillance after all that was denied.
Gee.
So she's had three MRIs. She's had about 8 CT scans. I can't tell you how many x-rays she's done. And we had 2 bone scans. Then we had the mammogram.
Awful.
And at this point, all she needed, 2 PET scans.
So
back, just to give you a quick update, back in last December 2016, she underwent her reconstruction surgery. In January, she was told she was in remission. The problem is that my wife never felt that she was healed or she was in remission because she was developing this fatigue, shortness of breath.
She knew something was
wrong. Yes, and she had this redness on her skin for the for the past year, over a year, year and a half. Okay, so going back, she was told she was in remission in January. In March, my wife decided to get a biopsy because this redness that she been having.
Redness on the skin.
On the skin, all over her chest, and it wrapped around her right arm and back. She was diagnosed that, that's related to her chemo, to the radiation, to a bacterial infection, in which at one point she received 6 weeks of intravenous antibiotics, fungal infection, saucer, and so forth. Okay? So in March, she decided, and she goes, honey, can I get this biopsy? And I guess, yes. So she ended up going to the dermatology here in La Jolla. And she ended up actually calling me before she got that done and said, oh, they're charging $1,400. Now, keep this in mind that most Americans would not be able to afford $1,400 for a simple biopsy, right? So I said, yes, you get that done. Two days later, I was with my wife at home, and she received a call, and I knew that something was very wrong because immediately she became upset. So I got on the phone, and I spoke to the dermatologist, and she had told us that she has recurrent cancer. So that I called the oncologist immediately, and he immediately ordered a PET scan.
And what happened?
Denied.
Again.
This time, I just could not tolerate that. So I requested to pay for it.
And how much is a PET scan?
$4,900. But it ranges in San Diego County alone, it ranges from $4,000 to $20,000. But the radiology department told us that Oh, you cannot order a PET scan.
So even though you had the means and you were willing to pay like $5,000 to help save your wife's life by getting this PET scan, it was still denied. What's the reason for that?
Well, they told us that the insurance company are the one that provides approval. And then the only time that you'll be able to order it is if it's approved by the insurance company.
Unbelievable. So the facility itself wouldn't do it for you, even though you had the money.
I had to wait for the appeal process to go through. So it took 2 weeks. March 6th, she got that approval. March 7th, she got it done. March 8th, we went and sat down to the oncologist, with the oncologist, and he pulled up the PET scan on the screen and said, anything that's red, it's cancer aside from the heart. All over her skin, all the redness that she had was cancer, and now it has progressed to her lungs and has progressed to the right side of her neck.
So do you believe if she'd gotten this test done the first time they asked for it, that
it would have prompted a biopsy a year and a half ago, and they would have learned that while the biopsy of her breast mass and the biopsy of the lymph node a year and a half ago showed that she was positive for estrogen, progesterone, HERS2, that she would learn that the cancer that she was having, that never got addressed, was estrogen negative.
So they were treating the wrong kind. So she had two different kinds of cancer, and they were only treating one of them.
Exactly. So for the year and a half, you know, this wasn't addressed whatsoever, because she never got the PET scan that would have revealed that that is cancer, and that would have prompted, you know, a biopsy.
So now your wife, Laura, is literally fighting for her life.
A young mother of two. Our daughter just turned 7 early this month, and our son turned 5 in May.
Now, when I talk to the average person, the average voter out there, one of the frustrations that they express to me is that it seems like the politicians, they tend to either say, oh, Obamacare is great and everything about it is good and we should leave it alone, instead of trying to see what problems there are that need to be fixed. And on the other side of the aisle, there are people saying repeal Obamacare and get rid of the mandates, and let's either replace it with nothing or replace it with, for lack of a better term, Trump Care, which would save the government a lot of money. But according to the Congressional Budget Office, it would kick 23 million people off of health care and make it unaffordable for many others, particularly seniors and those with pre-existing conditions, though it might be less for some young people. So in your wife's own situation, let's be clear, she was not on an Obamacare plan, but you've told me...
Private.
So it was a private plan, but you've told me that some of the denial care was because of provisions in Obamacare. Is that correct?
Well, there's one provision that the whole plan is to save $2.3 billion in a 10-year span by reducing the overuse of imaging studies.
So it comes down to what's considered overuse.
Exactly.
Any reasonable person would say this was not overuse. This is a case where the opposite occurred.
And you can bet your money that this was not decided by doctors, okay,
right,
by selecting, you know, PET scans.
So these were the bean counters making life or death decisions for cancer patients.
And Miriam, it don't matter if it's Obamacare, Trump Care, as long as you have the government and insurance company role in it, nothing's going to work.
Yeah, I've had denial of care in my own family, and that was before Obamacare. A very similar thing. I had a daughter who was a competitive figure skater, and she had a fall at home. She was in a lot of pain. The insurance company kept denying the MRI, and it took like a month or so to get it done, and it eventually showed two broken bones, and we had a real battle on our hands to even get the test done. So what's the answer to all of this?
And it's, to me, so absurd, right? Because when I went to medical school, I was taught to use every tool at my disposal and do everything humanly possible to heal the sick, right? To preserve life, to save life. I was never taught that I needed the approval of the insurance commissar or a faceless government bureaucrat first.
And so you have an interesting idea that we need something other than what's on the table right now, which is either Obamacare as it is or Trump Care for what it's worth. Tell us about your idea, which I understand has two components.
Yes. So I call it healthcare by the people and for the people, because I believe that life medical decisions, you know, this profound personal aspect of your life belongs to you, right, into the doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think when we spoke earlier, I mentioned that if you bring a loved one, you end up in the ER on Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, or New Year's, who is it that you're going to be in the ER? Who is it that you want to see in the ER? It's your doctor, right? And at that point of service, when you're there with your doctor, there's going to be only two people that's going to know how you feel. What is it that you need? How you should be treated, and no one else.
So you have the idea that it would be a different kind of coverage for catastrophic care, you know, the real emergencies, as opposed to routine care.
You take the routine health care out of the insurance company, right? And you allow the individual and the doctors manage routine health care. Just like if you have an auto insurance, it covers you for a catastrophic event, an accident, right? But it doesn't cover for your tune-up. It doesn't cover for your oil change. So I'm proposing what is called a medical association membership, where it provides a unique opportunity to Americans to take charge of their health care.
So as I understand it, just as one can have a gym membership and it lets you go to the gym as often as you want, you can go once a month or you can go three times a day if you choose, you would buy a membership and that would enable you to see your doctor and anybody else in their practice or their group basically as often as you felt you needed it.
That's it. That's it. At a fraction of a cost. So if you're a Medicare recipient, right, mm-hmm. you'll get a $100 voucher from the government, and that will go directly to the doctor. Okay. If you're a Medicaid recipient, it's a $40, $50 voucher that every month that gets paid to the doctor. Now think about this, because we've got to think about, you know, what is it that we want to accomplish, right? We want to provide the best health care, provide maintenance and preventive medical access to all at affordable cost, right?
Right.
How much do you pay, or what do you think the average pay for cable is? I pay like $140, but I'd say maybe $80, $100, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about making it affordable, $40. I think for most Americans, will be able to afford to see their doctor, and if they have the option to see the doctor when they need them, right? Mm-hmm. And anyone that they want to see.
Now, you've mentioned that under your plan, that would be paid for by Medicare and Medicaid. What about everyone who's not currently covered by Medicare or Medicaid? How would that work for them?
The premium remains the same.
So they would be paying that $50 or $100 a month instead of the government paying it.
You know, like my, you know, two young people, mm-hmm. right? We're paying over $2,000 a month, and we've been doing that religiously for over 10 years. And then when my wife gets sick, you expect that, you know, everything possible will be done for her to save her life.
Yeah, it's just astonishing. And our heart certainly goes out to you and your wife. Dr. Veltmeyer, the idea of paying just $50 or $100 a month sounds really good, but I have to ask you, how can the doctors afford that, and what happens if some patients overuse the care?
Sure. Well, for one, doctors will be free of this galactic avalanche amount of paperwork and documentation and queries, and we can streamline everything. We don't have to have a builder. We don't have to have a collector. So we will be able to have that close relationship with our patients, and we're not going to be, you know, dealing with needing to order a battery of tests and exams, because we'll be able to know exactly how you feel, what you need, and so forth. 80% of my 10-hour shift, it goes into answering queries, documentation. Right now, there's numerous of studies, and there's variations of this, what they call it, direct primary care, and have shown an amazing successful rate, like, you know, decrease in ER visits up to 90%.
Wow.
In one particular state, they saved $119 million in 1 year.
That's amazing. It sounds like an intriguing idea.
And for comparison purpose, let me just give you a quick number. There are 56 million Medicare recipients and 74 million Medicaid CHIP recipients in the United States right now, today. 56 million recipients, each receiving $100 per month, an average of charge for someone 65 and older in direct primary care practice. That voucher, and that will equal to $1,200 per year, equals $67.2 billion. We spent approximately $673 billion on Medicare in 2016, meaning that the MAM will cost 10% of the overall Medicare spending.
Wow.
For Medicaid, 74 million recipients receiving $50 a month, an average charge for a typical younger person voucher, $600 per year, equals to $44.4 billion. We spent about $553 billion last year for Medicaid spending. In total, MAM will cost, under this formula, $111.6 billion versus $1.226 trillion for Medicare and Medicaid combined. Granted that most of the costs, you know, likely came from hospitalization and higher costs of medical care. Yeah. And we're not comparing apples to apple. But for a simple comparison, it shows that the minimal cost of a private sector solutions as opposed to big government solutions. Remember that someone once said that if we simply took all the money in the federal government spends on government program and just send a check to every recipient sufficient to lift him or her out of poverty, it would be one-third of what we spend.
Fascinating.
Regarding insurance premium, most research shows that an average healthy person could purchase a catastrophic policy for $75 to $100 per year.
So for $75 to $100, you would have your catastrophic policy. $50 to $75, you would have your everyday policy.
And we're thinking about making it affordable, yeah. Right? Now you can try to fix the numbers. And yeah. These numbers will change. Because right now, like I said, the health market is tied up to the health insurance companies.
Yeah. That sounds affordable for most people, but for those who can't afford even that,
they'll just get the voucher, government voucher.
So the government would be paying a voucher for the poor under your plan, and the rest of us would be paying a little bit more.
And Medicare and Medicaid will pay for the catastrophic care for patients using the MAM, either directly, right, or possibly through a voucher so they can purchase their own policy and manage it.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. So on your plan, you'd be able to choose your own doctor, and there would be a reasonable number of doctors available?
Yeah, so if a primary doctor, you know, you call your primary doctor and you tell the primary doctor, I have severe right upper quadrant pain. Mm-hmm. Guess what? He, you don't really need an actual referral or an approval, pre-authorization or anything like that.
Nice.
That you just get, you know, what your doctor will say, call Dr. Dickinson, and you go to his office. Right? Mm-hmm. Dr. Dickinson will make that decision whether you do need for your gallbladder to be removed or not. No insurance company is deciding this. And the difference between is that about talking about reduce the cost is that just like Dr. Dickinson approached me a couple of weeks ago, how disillusioned he was that he's fighting against all these, big, monopoly health insurance company, that he's able to do what they call it laparoscopically cholecystectomy, removal of your gallbladder. Mm-hmm. At the door, after anesthesia, antibiotic, and so forth, for $3,000.
Now, your plan would not cover catastrophic care. So in addition to this membership plan, people would need to also purchase a supplemental catastrophic care plan to cover things like an appendectomy or cancer or a car accident. What would that cost?
Currently, right now, all the researchers and all the insurance companies that do provide catastrophic coverage only, they're charging $75 to $100 a month.
How would this affect the insurance companies, and do you think we could expect to see a fight from them over this proposal?
Of course, but, we got to keep in mind what's important here, right? We need to restore the patient-doctor relationship and roll back the role of the insurance company, and the government. Third-party interference has brought us to this point where most people are not able to afford healthcare. And most doctors are not able to practice medicine the way it stands right now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people may be shocked hearing this interview because we all know that it's difficult and challenging for poor people sometimes to get health care. And yet, if even a doctor who can afford a gold-plated plan can't get appropriate care when his wife gets cancer, how can anyone else?
That's right. Medicaid, right? I'm going to be just strictly straightforward and honest with you. If you have Medicaid, you're going to get substandard care.
Wow.
There's no question about it. The problem now, too, is that if you have Medicare, no longer doctors are able to afford to see you. Medicare is managed now by an HMO. So let's just say if I saw you in the ER and I spent 2 hours with you, I consulted with four people and so forth, mm-hmm. The most I can charge is $150. So it used to be that where I just billed Medicare $150, and in return, they would pay me 80% of that. Now that 80% goes to an HMO, and then in return, they give us whatever they feel they want. It's just very simple. Healthcare, it belongs to you. It belongs to, to the doctors. We make the choice whether we want a membership, you want better access to a doctor, or you want a catastrophic, or you want both, or so forth.
Now, you've come from another part of the world, and you've obviously done some research on our healthcare system here in the United States. So how does our healthcare system in the U.S. differ from healthcare around the world, particularly in other developed countries.
We live in the world's richest country. We have the best trained doctors, the most advanced technology and equipment, yet we're not able to provide affordable health care. The World Health Organization ranked us 36 out of 37 from the industrialized country in access to care, quality of care, treatable diseases, and so forth. So we're still...
So we're the next to the worst in the whole world in access to health care.
And we pay, you know, so essentially we pay more and get less, essentially.
And why is that?
It's because health care, it's tied up to the health insurance. And they're the one who's forcing doctors, you know, to practice rationed and defensive care.
Is there any other country that you're aware of other than the United States that has a for-profit healthcare system?
No, this is the only country that your health, your life, of your family and your loved one is for sale.
So really, we need to take the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies out of the equation, just like all these other countries have already managed to do.
That's it.
What about prescription drugs?
The FDA will make you believe that if you get medication from Canada, if you get medication from Mexico, that is very dangerous. But this is what I can tell you, that about 70% of people that are discharged on some form of medication, I get a call from the pharmacy because insurance company are refusing to pay, and they're forcing me to use generics. They actually explained to you that on the way here, I got a call from someone that discharged from an ear infection, and they told me the advisement that the patient cannot afford the copay. So he was advising me to prescribe an eye drop with the same antibiotic and use it for the ear.
Wow.
So think about this. If we're allowed to import same medication, approved medication to the United States, our American pharmaceutical company, they have two options, right? Get out of town or compete.
Canada is a very regulated market. I'm not sure about Mexico, but certainly if we're getting drugs from Canada, they've gone through tests for purity, for quality.
Absolutely.
Worry about getting something adulterated. So I agree with you. It makes sense if these pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. won't control the greed and make medications available at affordable rates, then why shouldn't people be able to buy them from Canada?
Exactly. Over 50% of the medication that we have at our disposal, they're not available to our American people because it's so expensive. It's absurd. Yeah.
My mother is in her 80s, and she's had the same heart and blood pressure medication for years at the same dosage. It used to be a few hundred dollars a month, and suddenly it's jumped to thousands of dollars. There's no reason for that.
It breaks my heart because if you're a Medicare recipient, right, you should have zero copay.
Yeah.
But, you know, think about it. You know, you can't really say the insurance company are the bad people, right, because what they care at the very end, what really matters to them, it's profit margin.
Well, I guess some people would argue it's rather immoral to put profit over human lives.
But that's their trade, right? And that's like I made that example that when you're sick, the doctor's going to be there, right? Believe me, the CEO of Aetna or Blue Cross is not going to come and try to take care of your family. So you're not going to get any compassion. You're not going to get preventive care. You're not going to get maintenance care from insurance companies or the government.
It's gotten to the point where it isn't even reasonable profits, but obscene profits when we've seen what happened with something like the EpiPen, where it went up hundreds of percent in cost.
Pharmaceutical companies have gone rogue. There's no control. And believe me, insurance companies have done the same.
They've gone rogue.
Rogue. That's it. You know, I refuse to support, to subsidize health insurance company profit, and I refuse to support subsidies for hospital profit and so forth. You know, if you're going to subsidize anyone, I think we should subsidize the individual, you and the doctor.
Makes sense to me. Now, if people want to get more information about your ideas about membership programs and catastrophic care, is there a website or someplace they can go for more details?
Yes, I'm actually... In about 2 weeks, I'm going to have the Weltmeyer Foundation that's going to lay out and flesh out a lot of that detail. V like Victor, ELTMEYER.
So, listeners, if you tuned in a little late, we've been speaking with Dr. James Weltmeyer, who is the head of family medicine at Sharp Grossmont Hospital, and he's been named Physician of the Year several times by his colleagues in the Medical Association in San Diego. So he's a very prestigious doctor whose own wife has been fighting for her life with breast cancer and running into some, as we've been discussing, some very unbelievable hurdles about denial of care, denial of life-saving tests that caused delays which have now put her life at risk. And we certainly wish your wife the best.
Right now, she's undergoing chemotherapy, her fourth cycle, and I believe we put in a request for a PET scan about a week ago. Mm-hmm. We're still waiting on that. I think it's day to day, and I believe that being diagnosed, you know, a year and a half later, that I'm hoping that it's not too little too late.
We certainly hope that too, and all of us here at East County Magazine certainly send our very warmest wishes to your wife for all that she's going through, and we certainly hope that she'll have a full recovery and do check.
Thank you.
Let us know.
So grateful and so gracious of you to have me here and share my story. And I'm hoping that we all can come together to build a healthier world for our children and grandchildren.
Well, that's certainly a wish that we should all get behind. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time to come out and speak with us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Cheers.